This is the Adam Gold Show.
Jordan Cornett from the ACC Network is joining us here on the program. I've missed my friend Jordan. Dennis doesn't yet know that your music, your walk-up music, is Ice Ice Baby.
About to say, what's going on? I was like, what show am I on?
Unbelievable.
What am I doing here?
Next time. I forgot to inform him. Hope you guys are doing well. Thank you very much for the time. You've been dialed into the NBA playoffs.
I have been dialed in. It's hard not to be dialed into these NBA playoffs because expect the unexpected, man. It feels like watching March Madness. I mean, who would have thought these outcomes would play out the way they have? You think you have it pegged, and it goes completely the other way. But it's been a fun watch.
The amount of, I don't know if people are just waiting for it. He can be a polarizing figure, I guess, for some people, especially like if you're Julius Hodge. I don't know. Chris Paul and the way that they exited the playoffs. Have you ever seen, a team as good as Phoenix, franchise record 64 wins, clearly the best team in the West all year long, just get absolutely humiliated like that on their floor?
A few things stick out to me, AG. One, I think it speaks to maybe we're putting way too much stock into the team that wins 60 games and wins the most in the NBA in the regular season, because the regular season ain't the postseason. And elimination basketball game sevens are an entirely different animal of their own. Devin Booker's never played in any of those. So we give him this, he's got this Mamba mentality. Devin Booker, he's like Kobe. Well, Kobe had to fall a few times in the postseason before he figured it out. Devin Booker, a game seven performance like that, it's on him. Chris Paul, it's on him. Everybody's saying this is the year he's going to win a title. But let's look at the track record of Chris Paul in this postseason when it comes calling time for him and he doesn't answer. And I think, you got to look at this and say Chris Paul is elite. He's one of the best to ever do it. But I think we crowned him a little bit ahead of what he actually is in terms of, is he the best to ever play the position? Is he the best point guard in the NBA? Some of those things have to be put into question when you fall like that. And also, Luka Doncic is a star. And Luka Doncic was the most fearless on the floor. That was very clear. I've never seen a team play that flat, AG. I come out with that kind of energy with what was on the line. That was stunning.
Who'd have thought that Phoenix's best quarter would have been the first when they were down 10?
I only watched the entirety of that game to say that I watched the team get boat raced and blitzed like that from start to finish. I just could not believe there was never any counterpunch where like the Suns put on like a 20-3 run and made it like at least I kind of got to stick around. I mean, this thing was 50 going into the fourth, wasn't it?
Yes.
At one point it hit 50 in the fourth.
Yeah, it was crazy. Like my son is a big he's a big Luka fan, and I kept joking with him, and obviously he enjoyed the joke, that the Suns were on like a 2-8 run, meaning they scored 2 of 10 points. It just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger, but. Look, I think the Mavericks have figured something out defensively. And I don't know how Golden State's gonna check them. It really is about stopping Luka and then letting the other trying to limit the damage to the other guys. I mean, they're gonna concentrate everything on Luka. They were good against the Grizzlies when it was Ja. They struggled when they didn't know where it was coming from.
Yeah, absolutely. With these Mavs, going back to just how they've been able to do it, AG, the three-point line has been incredible to this squad. I mean, they can space you out, they can air you out, and when you decide to commit to being a smallish team that's going to play small ball, we see what the league has kind of become. I mean, DeAndre Ayton was a virtual non-factor. It's like the big man position, when push comes to really shove, it's obsolete. I mean, DeAndre Ayton hadn't factored in no way in that series down the stretch, most especially in a game seven. I think he had 5 points.
Yeah,
that guy should have feasted against a small lineup like Dallas. And I think it speaks to you can go out there, get hot, have a star, and maybe win by playing five small outs, going to a smallest lineup and playing five out. Mavs got a real shot to do it.
Oh, there's no question. I had said to a couple of friends of mine earlier in the as the playoffs were getting ready to start. Is it crazy for me to say that I think the West might end up going through Dallas Now, I didn't believe that enough to put anything on it, because I'm not that way. But like, there was something about the Mavericks down the stretch that looked different to me, and I think maybe Luka is using all of the stuff that people say about him, that you're never going to win this, you're never going to win that, and they're awfully good.
And this is the beauty of the NBA. What keeps it relevant, what makes it so intriguing, especially during this time, is we see what's lost already. I mean, Giannis, Chris Paul, Devin Booker, all these guys out, James Harden, Joel Embiid. But look what you're still left with in the four teams that are remaining. You've got Steph and Clay. You've got Luka. You've got Jimmy Butler down in Miami. You got Jason Tatum up in Boston. I mean, you've got legitimate put teams on your back guys. Yeah. They can go out there and, of course, win a title. And one of those four teams happens to be one of the best dynasties we've seen in recent basketball history in the Warriors, that clearly still have a couple minutes and a little bit of juice left in the tank.
Yeah. Who, by the way, real quick before I move on to the Celtics and Heat real quick, who gets the primary assignment on Luka? Is it Andrew Wiggins or is it Draymond?
I think it's going to be Wiggins, and at times it's going to be Draymond. I mean, that's the beauty of what the Warriors do. They're going to throw a bunch of different looks. They're going to have to. You might even see some junk stuff come at him. I mean, you're going to have to defend him like he's the best player in the NBA after what he put on in this past series. I mean, he was virtually unstoppable and could hurt you at every level. So, I think you get a start with Wiggins. You're definitely going to see a healthy dose of Draymond. But this Warriors team defensively is not the championship caliber defense right. They've had when they've hoisted that trophy. So there has been a little downtick there. It'll be curious to see. I don't love the matchup for the Warriors.
Yeah, I mean, Dallas is just, again, their defense is so much better now than it was really the first half of the season. Jordan Cornette from the ACC Network. I promise we're going to talk at least a little bit about the ACC before I let you go. But how do you see the East playing out with Boston coming off that 55 three-point attempt effort in the win over Milwaukee and Miami?
I look at this one and I think it feels like it's going seven. I mean, these are two very good defensive teams, two of the best in the NBA. Both teams play with a real edge. If you're talking about Bucket getting star power, I know what Jimmy Butler's done. I'm keenly aware. But Jason Tatum's a more natural bucket getter that I have a little bit more faith in. So when you're pairing the superstars that can go get it, I do give the nod to Tatum a little bit more. But, man, I mean, Jimmy Butler is a gamer. And he's a two-way guy that really – he kind of embodies what that culture is. I look at the ability for a Bam Adebayo in this series with Robert Williams not being fully healthy, the kind of impact he can have. He's a hybrid big. He's not a DeAndre Ayton. And I think he could ultimately end up being the difference maker. But yet still, I got to go with the Celtics. I think the Celtics win the series in seven.
Jason Tatum just was so good. He had some bad games.
Gosh.
He had some bad games, right? But
that's how he responded, AG.
And that 46 in Milwaukee.
Old Tatum and new Tatum.
Yeah, that 46 in Milwaukee in game six, facing elimination, coming off a not great performance in game five.
Yeah, and to me, it's like, that's what we thought James Harden was, right? Like, oh, if James is struggling, you know, he's one of the best scorers at the basketball ever. Like, he'll figure it out. But James Harden ain't that anymore. That's who Jason Tatum is. Jason Tatum, when he runs into a roadblock, the shot's not falling from distance. Look, it's, again, when he's on, but it's that mindset where he says, I got to get to other spots on the floor. I got to keep being assertive. I've got to be aggressive and play with that edge. That's the evolution of Tatum. That's what you saw in game six. And he, the numbers weren't astronomical in game seven, but you saw it there as well. The team just played their lights out, especially from distance as a whole. The Celtics were. All their role players know, they understand their roles and their parts. That's what makes them difficult.
Yeah, there are very similar. These are two similar teams. I agree that at the end, it's the separator might be that Tatum is that guy as a scorer. Jordan Cornette. All right, I promise we were going to talk at least a little bit about the league since you are the star in the ACC Network. I want to ask you about your former coach at Notre Dame. Because Mike Bray said the other day about NIL and the new world of college athletics, we get compensated pretty well. It's up to us to figure it out. I am firmly in his camp. I don't want guardrails. I think all of this will settle itself out. I think it is up to coaches to adjust. Where are you on all of the new things that coaches have to deal with?
I mean, you're not going to get pity from my side, and that's why me and Coach Bray are so closely aligned, not because he's my coach, but was my coach at Notre Dame, but we see a lot of life the same way. I do believe there's a need for a better definition of kind of what this new world looks like. A centralized leading voice, as we've heard talked about, goes a long way. But in terms of sympathizing for coaches, I don't. I mean, they've been riding the gravy train here for a long time. And that kind of that part is running out a little bit, where it's just not all being siphoned towards them, but the pie is being shared a little bit. Does it make it inconvenient? Absolutely. But here's why Coach Bray is the perfect person to have this mindset and ultimately give this soundbite that's been making waves. That's what Coach Bray kind of inherited at Notre Dame, a world that was told to him, this is how it goes. Mm-hmm. It's not ideal, but if you buy into it, you can shine. It was a football school. Notre Dame doesn't care about basketball. Coach Bray knew that when he came in, but he said, how can I take what many would view as a negative, coaching basketball at this proud football school that leads with football, how can I make that an advantage? And he did, by recruiting on Saturdays, college football Saturdays, by selling what needs to be sold about the school to the athlete to make it desirable. Coaches looking at this the same way. NIL, transfer portal, all these long in the tooth coaches are the ones that are being quote-unquote hurt by it, are lamenting publicly, where coach goes, where's the advantage? The advantage is to think, hey, this is deserved of these athletes. So how can I embrace what they deserve, albeit a little wild right now, seemingly reckless, but how can I adapt and adjust? And he's doing that.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Mike Bray. He's not only a brilliant offensive basketball coach, I think he's a great leader, and I think he speaks the truth, because I agree with him. Like, all the coaches complaining about what this new world is. I mean,
what does it do? What does it do for you?
It doesn't do anything for you. And we should have been here for a long time. For those of us who have looked at college sports as being somewhat unfair and exploitative of athletes, financially anyway, we've been waiting for this day. And I think the kids deserve it. And I think, look, I think it'll all kind of level itself out. We won't see as much stupidity. But there's going to be stupidity, because there's stupidity everywhere. I don't know how many people haven't looked at the papers these days, but there's stupidity all over the world.
There is stupidity everywhere. Look, some of the stuff is problematic. I mean, you can look at the tampering side and coaches not knowing from day to day if their guy's going to stay within their program. I mean, look, you got to look to the guy to your side who's your age, who's the adult in the room, that is setting a market where it feels like a guy to play 12 games out west at USC is worth $3 million to play 12 games. If there's a fool out there willing to give that to somebody, that can't be controlled, that stupidity. If you think there's value in giving a kid $3 million to play 12 Saturdays, that's on you, buddy. I don't know what to tell you with that. The market tells you what the market value is. And if somebody's willing to idiotically set that value in that market at that point, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, and that was probably given before it became part of the rules, which is something that I'm not sure the NCAA is aware of. All right, final thing for you, Jordan Cornett, ACC Network. Your wife, Shay, who we've seen now anchor SportsCenter, I don't know, 100 times since you and I last spoke, is she cool with the fact that her Chicago Bears don't seem to have done anything to make Justin Fields' life any better?
Now, let me tell you this, AG, you're very lucky I'm home alone right now.
Uh-oh.
Because if this question was posed to me when I usually have it on speaker doing some of these hits, if she would have heard that, you would have heard an end of the phone call, because it's a sensitive subject here,
yeah.
What's been going on in Chicago. I think there's a level of optimism that Ryan Poles is the guy to lead this group at the GM position. I think that there's a hope that, coach is going to figure this thing out. With this group, Eberflus, but there's not a lot around them where it looks like this is going to be put in position for them to do a lot.
I think they're just hoping he survives the year and they can get some draft capital and continue the construction next season. Jordan Cornett, I hope you have we'll speak soon, I'm sure. But if we don't speak for a while, have a good start to your summer.
Bro, wish me luck, man. I'm actually sitting here bunkering in. I'm giving the commencement address for graduation at my old high school. I can't believe they're picking me to do this next week. I don't know what I'm going to say. I got to give them 15 minutes. So I'm kind of grinding right now, hopefully the stop provoking conversation can put me in position to put something pen to paper.
Yeah, it's all about recruiting. You know, you've obviously recruited well in your life. It's all about recruiting. So enjoy. Just let it rip, man.
That's what I think I'm going to do, man. Have a glass of wine, put on some good music, and put this thing together.
Yeah, look, and your music is playing you out. See if they'll play Ice Ice Baby as you take the stage.
Yes, AG, good to talk to you, man. Have a great rest of the week, brother.
You too. Jordan Cornette, ACC Network. He's the best. All right, we have a hockey schedule, or rather a hockey series that's going to start here in Raleigh tomorrow. Canes and the Rangers. Canes are a pretty substantial favorite. For those of you who are interested in making it financially interesting, how to make it financially worth your while. We'll talk to Michael Leboff of the Action Network on maybe how to play the Canes and the Rangers next. NHL conference semifinals start tonight. We will be in the state of Florida with the All Florida series, which is awesome. Also, it is Colorado and St. Louis, which could set records for goals scored between those two teams, two of the best offensive teams in the sport. And it's all available for you to wager on, whether you use Action Network's app, or although maybe not in the state of North Carolina, or you place wagers elsewhere. Michael Leboff from the Action Network joins us. Best Twitter handle in the business, at the Big Lebowski. All right, we're going to start with the Hurricanes and the Rangers, which the Hurricanes are the second biggest series favorite on the board behind Colorado. It seems there's not a lot of value in betting Carolina, but they were the better team than the Rangers in all four meetings. They only won three of them, but still, they were the better team four times this year. How are you looking at this series?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on again. And even after I was wrong about the Bruins and Hurricanes.
It's all right.
I mean, everything number you're going to look at is going to point to the Hurricanes winning the series. And if you look at what just happened over the last 2 weeks with the way the Rangers played and the way the Hurricanes played, if you watch those two series, the only similarity between Rangers, Penguins, and Bruins, Hurricanes was that they both went seven games. Outside of that, looked like two completely different sports. The Rangers just were a mess at 5-on-5. They didn't really even get the goaltending they needed until, you know, they did in game one, which they lost, and then they got it again in game seven. But they just ended up catching every significant break in the series. And I'm not talking like on ice stuff. I'm talking more, you know, of course they went up against Louis Domingue for 16 out of 25 periods. They had Sidney Crosby. The Penguins were up 3-1 in the series, 2-0 in a game. Sidney Crosby gets knocked out. They lost Brian Dumoulin in game one. They lost Ricard Raquel in game one. So everything in terms of ice breaks went the way of the Rangers, and they still were outplayed. Like, I think the final tally on Natural Stat Trick's high danger scoring chance metric was something like 116 for the Penguins and 62 or so for the Rangers. Whatever it was like a 50-point gap. That just tells you that the Rangers were just running around that entire series. They caught a lot of breaks, and the goaltending just didn't hold up for Pittsburgh. You know, Louis Domingue couldn't sustain it. So with all that being said, like, the Hurricanes should win this series going away. The odds tell you that, right? -190 in a second round series against a team that finished 6 points behind you in the standings. That's wide. I think there is a way to play the Hurricanes, right? If the Hurricanes win the series, they should win it going away. They should win it by more than one game. So like -1.5 at +110, -2.5 games. I'm talking, you know, a game spread in the series,
right?
At +220. I think those actually have value, because if this series goes more than six games, the Hurricanes are in trouble, because that means the Rangers are doing what they've been doing, you know, basically for most of the season and then in the first round, which is perhaps they're getting outplayed, whatever, however you want to say it, but then they're being opportunistic. And I don't have as much faith that the Rangers can pull it off against a team like Carolina. Pittsburgh is a good 5-on-5 team. Carolina is one of the best 5-on-5 teams in the league. And the Hurricanes penalty kill, as you know, is, you know, the best one in the league during the regular season. Of course, in the your numbers will be a little inflated in the regular season because you're going up against, you know, the Buffalo Sabres power play,
right,
and then the next night you'll take on the Sharks or whatever. So you're going up against a good power play every night. So that number will come down, but it still should be much better than what the Penguins threw at the Rangers. The Rangers scored on 31.6% of their power plays in round one. So I have faith that Carolina can nullify that edge. They won't be going up against Louis Domingue. They'll be going up against another backup. But, you know, I thought Antti Raanta was perhaps the MVP of that series against the Bruins. I'm not sure what the temperature is down
right
where you are, but from an outsider perspective, I thought he was the most important player. And I know that's not revealing much because he's the goalie, but all this being said, man, the Rangers voodoo does seem like it's real. There's something about this team that really is scary to me. So I would say the Hurricanes are the team that I would be closer to betting here. I like them on the series spread, but I'm still scared.
I know you are. That is Michael Leboff is joining us from the Action Network. I'm going to say that's your Islanders anxiety podcast bleeding through. I totally understand it. I watched the Penguins-Rangers series intently, and Pittsburgh was the better team. The goal that Domingue allowed in Game 6 that the Rangers ultimately won the game on was, I mean, you can't. You can't be in the NHL and allow that goal that it came in a tie game in a playoff series was an absolute killer. Then the penalty that former Hurricane Brock McGinn had to take because he turned the puck over in overtime, and then I still don't know how the Panarin shot got through. There didn't seem to be any goal there, and the puck just sort of hyperspaced somehow into the back of the net. I agree. I think the Hurricanes are the better team. If the series is decided at 5-on-5 where they would prefer it, I think Carolina is in good shape. Michael Leboff at The Big Lebowski on Twitter, Action Network. I appreciate your time. Enjoy the playoffs. I think you're going to be right across the board.
Yeah. And hey, go Kings.
Michael's great. And by the way, we'll have more from Michael in a preview Kane's Corner podcast.
This is the Adam Gold Show.